Hey Frank, hello.
Hello, Ada. Good morning.
Morning. Welcome to the show. I really appreciate you doing this. I know how busy you are. So thank you for taking the time to be with us today. Let me quickly begin and hand the word over to you and ask, how did you get into aligners?
Well, first of all, let me thank you for having me today. It's a great pleasure for me to be on your show. And
Our pleasure.
You know, we both go alongside for quite some time. We partially started this aligner journey. But for myself, how did I get into this? Well, it was in 2005 when a recruiting agent contacted me on behalf of a company back in the day that nobody really knew, Align Technology. And they had a product that back in the day, nobody really wanted, Invisalign, right? So I was part of this very early disruptive technology introduction into the European market. And it was great. I didn't know what I was getting myself into. But here we are 21 years later. And I still enjoy being in that space, having seen the evolution. And I think we still right in the middle of something that is giving orthodontists, dentists, patients a great future. Absolutely.
For sure. For sure. I mean, I think none of us knew what we were getting into when we first began.
Indeed.
I can speak for myself also. So what do you do now?
Well, you know, I had a very successful corporate career for 20 years in digital orthodontics, as I would call it today, because it has become a wider field. And then I decided it's time, on my last leg of my career, to do something for myself. You know, working independently, as I have gained quite some experience in the field of aligner commercialization strategy, building organizations. And I'm running today with a friend of mine a company which is called Concom Dental. It's located in Cologne, Germany, and we are specialized in, well, supporting small, mid-size, or even large-size global dental supply companies in their digital transformation.
Sounds exciting. Yeah. So I know you for many years, and I know how much you put into the aligner business, how much you contributed to the aligner business. And on another aspect, what did you gain, not in terms of monetary gain, but what did you gain out of the aligner business in terms of maybe experience, network, whatever comes to your mind?
Well, it's a huge variety of personal gains over the last 20 years. And I think the one thing that has been carrying me for 20 years is the fact that we back in the day started something that was disruptive, that was not standard of care back in the day. And we had to find orthodontists that had this entrepreneurial gene, that spirit, the DNA of trying something new that was not the ordinary, that was not accepted. And I had the pleasure to meet people of that caliber and that DNA all over the world. And today, 20 years into this, I still very proud of having those contacts, working with those people, and seeing the evolution. Back in the day, we as a company learned more from our providers in terms of clinical applicability than what we have given back in the day ourselves as clinical selection criteria for patients in the beginning, right? We really learned every month from, you know, entrepreneurial brains in orthodontics what aligner therapy is capable of. And this is still, compared to what it is today, minority. We are so far advanced compared to what we had in the beginning.
Sure. I mean, even like going back 6 years, 7 years, it's really far advanced. So which brings me to another question, really. So I go to as many congresses and events as I can, also to learn, also to network, see everyone again. It's really nice to be in those events. But last couple of years, excluding the current European Alliance Society meeting that we had like 2 weeks ago, so most events tend to go around in a circle in terms of clinical content, and it's getting to the point like if you go to in a year, let's say, five of these events, you're gonna be good for the next 2 years, maybe. It feels like that, you know? But I'm excluding the latest European Aligner Society meeting because I see also more aligner brands coming into the business, and they're bringing new tech and new stuff, new developments, both biomechanical stuff and also really pushing the edge on some material science too. What is your take on this? You know, how is the aligner world gonna evolve clinically from now on?
Interesting question, Ada. What I've seen is, and I would agree with you, for the last 5 years, with maybe a few exceptions, but everybody was pretty much presenting the same type of aligner product, right? In our language, the differentiating unique value proposition wasn't really there anymore. Everybody was pretty much claiming the same values. But I think the companies coming in really late at the moment have a huge benefit. A, they can observe where the current competition landscape is positioned.
They're seeing the whole playing field. So, yeah.
Exactly. And they also can go back to their own biomechanical and orthodontic heritage and see what is it that we have been doing well over the last 30, 40, 50 years in fixed appliances and translate that into aligner therapy. And I'm very, very much impressed by the fact that there is a company that launched 3D printed attachments. This is to me not only from a workflow perspective, but also from a precision and accuracy perspective,
Yeah.
a huge gain. So combining indirect bonding technology with 3D printed attachments makes workflows easier for sure. It reduces the failure rate of misplacement. And actually, in a biomechanical setting with aligner therapy, it has a potential to improve tooth movement accuracy and tooth movement, I mean, predictability and resulting into better clinical outcomes. So that's one thing that I see. And if we
I
take
went to
this,
the workshop, by the way.
oh, you did? Okay.
To see them in action, you know, the ups and downs of the 3D printed attachments. I mean, that's for sure the future. I saw a couple of like things to improve, maybe in terms of clinical applicability, meaning there is still like a learning curve to it. And there are some tricky cases which you cannot really place those type of attachments, but I really like the idea. I like the implementation. And if more companies wrap their head around it, I'm sure there are going to be better and better solutions on this too. Because the most time-consuming thing that we have on the clinical side, on the chair side, is bonding attachments, right? So,
Absolutely. Yeah.
yeah, I mean, that's going to be a huge game changer. I agree. Yeah.
And
So, yeah.
it always takes one to start this. And then it triggers, R&D potential in other companies. It opens a new playing field, for biomechanical improvement. And I think it's not only that we extend the potential of predictable tooth movement, we also open the door for those who are not yet fully convinced that aligner therapy is an equal orthodontic modality, right?
Still, yes, there are those guys, yes.
yeah, but if we combine this with maybe combination treatment, and you say on one arch you start with aligners, maybe you have on the lower arch a minor crowding or spacing, and you have the more complex malocclusion on the upper arch, and you're not 100% sold on clear aligner therapy as a clinician, why not doing on the upper arch fixed appliances for 6, 8 months, and then switch to aligner therapy while you do the minor correction in the lower arch all the way through with aligner therapy, And I think that is also an opportunity for companies
Sure.
that combine the knowledge of fixed appliances as well as aligner therapy in a digital setting.
Okay, so that brings me to another question, believe it or not. So, I mean, you partly explained it throughout your explanations, but why do you think there was this major shift from braces to aligners? I mean, from the doctor side, from company side, of course. That's not even, I mean, it's all there, but from the doctor side, what do you think moved doctors to switch?
Well, I think curiosity about, I mean, about the clinical applicability, and there is a we got to look at the adoption curve over time, right? And at the beginning, we had a different type of customers resonating with aligner therapy than it is today. But still, what made doctors buy into this? Let's be very simple here. Aligner therapy has gained momentum simply because it is what the patient wants. Because, I mean, we can go into slicing and dicing the onion here, but bottom line, it is as simple as that. To me, it is simply what the patient wants. And when we consider the fact that every year, around about 500 million people on the planet would benefit from orthodontic treatment, functional and aesthetic or aesthetically. But only 25 million annual case starts we see. And that's for the whole orthodontic treatment modality, that is fixed appliances and aligners together. And the accessibility to the treatment that has driven, the adoption. A lot of doctors are simply doing aligners for the fact that their patients want it, the patient demands it. And that's good.
So in a way, aligners contributed to the ortho market in general to grow, right?
Absolutely,
I
absolutely.
mean, you get more patients now in the
True,
system,
true.
and yeah, that's also I think is a given, right? So no brainer. But we also have the numbers to support this. That's that's comforting. But do you think it's going to continue?
Yes, I do believe it is going to continue. The adoption is going to continue, maybe at a slower pace, from a provider perspective. Because I do believe within the group of orthodontists, every orthodontist has had multiple opportunities to start with aligner therapy in his career. The ones who are not doing it today, they may not doing it because the right combination setting hasn't been made available to them. It's their belief system biomechanically, And you got to get your head and your heart around something that is new in order to really embrace the technology. And so far, it was either that or that, right? And the pendulum went back and forth between two treatment modalities. Maybe educational driven in between, I don't want to say hybrid, a combination treatment is going to open the door for a next wave of adoption for those who not fully yet understand or believe in Alina biomechanics. And they're so far, we're not willing to make that 100% call. But if you can combine in a digital planning treatment setup, braces and aligners, and you discuss that with the patient, and then in the end, you provide the type of treatment that you as a provider feel comfortable with, as well as your patient is going to accept. It has implications on outcomes, compliance, and doctors' personal experience into a new modality. Maybe we're going to see that as one of the next stepping stones into a wider adoption rate.
I mean, it also can be done right now, right? I mean, you can say to all your patients, I might need to, put on braces for the last 3 4 months if we need to, just in case, and feel comfortable. And if you need to, you do. I mean, if you don't, then don't. So it's there now. So
Yeah, but Abbas,
you can
sorry,
put
that
up the
doesn't feel
option.
right. That does
Really?
not feel right.
Okay.
If you look at the practice setting today, and it starts with patient data acquisition, you have an intraoral scan, you have your treatment planning software, and in an ideal world, you plan the treatment digitally. You have different modalities that you can choose for the same patient. You can simulate the outcome, you can predict timings, and you can discuss this with the patient. And then you take the patient serious about his personal concerns, his clinical and aesthetic concerns. And then it does not feel like a fallback plan just in case of. That is, nobody wants that. You got to deliver what promised to deliver when you promise to deliver. And the acceptance and the adoption is probably driven also by this holistic approach in one digital ecosystem. And that's not yet there. Nobody has that. It's fragmented, but that's might be, I don't know. I mean, I don't have a crystal ball, but that might be the next opportunity to drive provider adoption.
But yeah, so that's a good point, because this is not related to a doctor who's already committed having more patients with hybrid approaches, because clinically, if you're committed, then you can do almost any case with aligners. So this is for like doctors who are not committed, who cannot make up their minds, to have a, as you said, solid foundation from where they're coming from biomechanically, to be more confident moving ahead with aligners. So yeah, in terms of the market growth of aligners, yes, I mean, for sure. But individually, do you think practices are gonna keep on growing? Because this is also something that that was promised, because you're gonna have more chair time, you're gonna have more free time, you can fill it up with more patients, right? If you want, go play golf, but so up to you. In that sense, I believe the first part of the conversation that we had, since more patients are accepting treatments, that should be the case, right? So individual doctors who are already committed should be having more and more cases from before. So in Turkey, at least, we don't have the data to support this. We have little statistics to go on by, but I'm sure you have statistics from abroad that, I mean, off the top of your head, the individual patient starts grew in a way that makes aligners credible in that sense, in terms of what's promised and what's happening.
So yes, growth will continue. That's a mm-hmm. given. If we look at, this is a retrospective analysis between 2019 and 2023. We saw an overall growth over the period of 23%.
That's amazing.
And that is
because it's a market that's been going on for hundreds of years.
Well, let's say it this way. The overall number in aligner case starts, the growth is driven by clear aligner therapy. It's not driven by brackets and wires.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
We got to be really clear here that the increment comes because of clear aligner therapy. And yeah. That is what I said earlier, provider adoption, and simply because it is what the patient wants, right? This is one side to look at, but there are other elements that are going to drive momentum in the markets, right? Consumer expectations for comfort, aesthetics is all around. For the majority of markets that we operate in, aligner therapy is out of patient pocket. We have only a handful of markets where the social security system contributes to the treatment cost, and that usually applies only to teenagers and adolescents and children. So patients that pay also behave a little bit like consumers. We also see technologically, the whole in clear aligner therapy environment is maturing, right? The clinical applicability is widening. And I think we will see also in the future more complex treatments being treated with aligners.
Mm-hmm.
On a wider range. Today, the specialists, the doctors that have 2,000-4,000 cases under their belt, they feel comfortable treating all kinds of malocclusions with aligners. But that's not the majority of providers out there. The majority of providers out there they are somewhere on their clinical proficiency curve with regards to clear aligner therapy. And every time they improve their individual clinical proficiency, they are gaining confidence for the next patient walking into their practice, representing an even more complex malocclusion, and the doctor is confident that he can treat that with clear aligner therapy, predictably, with good clinical outcomes. And that's the learning curve that everybody goes through at his individual pace. But we see that is growing the overall caseload.
True.
Plus, we see AI is supporting this. We shouldn't forget, right? AI is supporting this whole treatment planning process.
Yeah.
The yeah. monitoring piece is driven by AI technology.
Yes.
So you can detect if something has the potential to go wrong before it goes wrong. And all those things are stretching a little bit the imagination of some doctors. But the technology is enabling practices to treat patients better, faster.
I totally agree. Since also I have an AI product, I have to agree on that. But you know, the fear of technology, you know, we had this when mm-hmm. we first introduced aligners to sure. markets, right? So the fear of technology is still there. You'll be amazed because outside, what I'm right now pushing is the subscription model that we have on AI treatment planning. But I see that even though people are hooked on aligners, they do 3D digital treatment plans, they know their way around those softwares and everything. But still, if you introduce a new tech in the game, the fear of technology is still there. For some, not all, but because they again immediately think, would I be able to implement this? Would I be able to use this properly in a way that it's instructed? So those are again going to be challenges, I think. And I partly see that with some people, because if you make the new tech user-friendly, easily adaptable, then you see the benefits. But if it gets complicated, like if it takes people to get on board in 3 days, 4 days, it's kind of difficult, you know? That's the hard thing about AI, I believe, because it's not all simple as ChatGPT. I mean, I looked at dental monitoring, for example, very briefly. So great concept. If you wanna use it to the full extent, it's gonna take time. There's gonna be a learning curve. So anything that has a learning curve is gonna be, of course, challenging to implement and sell. But in that sense, a good thing that we came to this spot, the so to speak, add-on technologies in the aligner business is helping doctors a lot. But what do you see maybe missing there, or should be improved to move easily with all the getting rid of the fear of technology stuff out of the way and move steadily?
I think there is an easy way to look at this. The gain of the technology get to be significantly bigger for me as a provider than the burden to learn it.
Perfect. Okay.
Because everybody that we talk to is running a business, you know, and it's not only the doctor. And I think what I've learned over the last 20 years, a successful orthodontic practice is dependent on an entire practice team and the engagement of an practice team. And that means everybody got to be involved in understanding the digital workflow. And the bright doctor's values about, you know, clinical outcome, workflow efficiency, patient service, whatever it is. But a doctor only cannot make it happen. And the increase in complexity from a workflow perspective, it needs to be broken down into smaller pieces and put on the shoulders of more people than just the owner operator. Who is also the clinical responsible, the HR responsible, the finance guy, and the chief technology officer, all in one person, then it slows adoption big time because there are only so many hours a day that you can do what you got to do, right? So if
True.
we manage this in a more digestible approach and assign responsibilities across an entire team in a logical way, the adoption might be easier, seamless, and the outcome is compelling for all parties involved, right?
So it all goes back to having a good team, right? Who can take responsibility and initiative on things. So that's right. That's right. So it's going to be smoothening the transition of any technology that you bring into the practice.
Maybe other, just while we speak about it, what we're also going to see is a shift in generation. You know, we have the baby boomers, and the baby boomers are not what I would call the digital natives, right?
No.
No, but the next generation that comes and takes over responsibility in an ortho practice is digital native. And maybe
True.
the adoption amongst those
Gonna be
in an,
faster, I'm sure.
it's going to be faster, for
For sure.
sure.
For sure. I agree. I agree. I mean, I cannot fathom it because the thing is, I saw the first cell phone with an antenna when I was 18, probably. Now people are, I mean, born with iPads in their hands. So, yeah, I agree totally. It's going to be a different game for them, for sure. It is a different game right now for them, for sure.
It started already.
Yeah, for sure. I'm a bit old in that sense, but anyways. Yeah, so that's great. But then my next question would be, so you're opening up a practice, let's say. So how would you set it up today to be at the standards for digital ortho, providing a decent service? I'm not saying like go crazy with all digital and techno, but just a decent service with a digital ortho setup. That's really efficient from day one. So how would you set it up?
Wonderful question, and you know this is gives us both an opportunity to maybe outline the next generation ortho practice landscape, right? I mean, one thing got to be absolutely cemented in any practice, and that is clinical excellence, because that is simply not negotiable. Despite all, you know, technology that we have and AI support, clinical excellence is not negotiable and shouldn't be compromised, right? So, but yeah, a modern practice should think of a digital workflow of the get-go. Digital data acquisition should be the standard. Learning about, and I mean, developing a personal expertise in clear aligner therapy is essential. And that means not only the workflow, but understanding aligner biomechanics, right? We know that aligner biomechanics completely different than the biomechanics with fixed appliances. They got to understand the differences in staging strategies, you know, hybrid treatment approaches, or even the use, I mean, the use of TADs, right? This is what I would call contemporary orthodontics. The full basket of tools in a digital environment, and not being shy asking for a second or third opinion in the beginning if they, for the first time, digitally plan a treatment and maybe combining modalities or requesting a second opinion on the treatment plan, because that's a big beauty of digital technology, that you can get a second opinion from a peer, from a colleague, from a friend, or from a third-party service. And you almost have it at your fingertip, and that is how you can build your own clinical proficiency over time. And it goes much faster today than what it used to be in the days when you had a stone model, right? That's to me really something where I feel like this is driving future ortho practice development. CBCT is something that, you know,
Should
I
be there.
remember the discussions, you know, do we really need in orthodontics a CBCT scan? Well, then the companies providing aligner therapy first started by having library rules in their treatment animation, right? Today, well, you can get the whole nine yards from your own CBCT data, and you move really in almost a real setting, huh?
True. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's gonna be all digital, and you're gonna need to see everything to be on top of things, the roots, the bone, the impacted tooth. So so what I want to ask you next is, so you've been on the company side of things for a very long time, right? Have you been an aligner patient at any
Yes.
rate? Okay, great. So you know the other side of the thing
I do.
also. Right. So from company perspective, now companies provide a lot of education to doctors, right? I mean, maybe never before seen kind of rate in education. It's happening. Even you can call it event fatigue. We used to say it like 10 years ago, but now it's, man, I mean, it's really happening. But in it's also creating some noise, you know, through all that noise, filtering everything and finding your own way as a doctor, because not all speakers speak in a unified manner. So finding your own way and clearing out the noise, it's kind of also challenging now, because if one guy give out the lectures, it's very easy, like copy and paste, you do it. But now you hear multiple versions of things, and doctors kind of get sometimes confused. That doesn't keep them from moving ahead with the treatments. But in that sense, I mean, since you are also like advising companies now on how they should communicate with also with their customers, right? So do you have like a model for education that is best suited? I mean, I don't mean the content, but in terms of supporting the learning curve. Everyone is at different stages of the learning curve. So, how should companies come to this? I mean, is it like a product-based education? We have this product now, let's give the education for that product. We have this. Or should it be in a more structured approach? Or, I don't know. Do you find this an area that needs to be worked on? Let's say it like that.
It's a very great question, and probably one of the areas that many companies struggle with. They all have a very good intent, right? But there is, based on the sheer volume of education that's really out there, there is by now a diminishing return because it's simply too much. Too much what's offered, and it's too hard for the doctor to really go through all the offerings and picking the ones that they need the most at the time they look at it. That's the biggest challenge. And you rightly so said, Ada, they are at an individual position of their learning curve. And learning curve means their clinical proficiency, the practice structure, the team structure, and what they personally want to get accomplished with aligner therapy in their practice for their patients. And in a way, what we have seen is best outcome we can achieve providing companies is understanding to do what we call an inventory meeting. You get to really sit down to understand your customer's needs in the customer's environment. And then you can see, can we group four, five, six doctors that have a similar positioning from a learning perspective in practice structure and what they are aiming to do next in a clear line of therapy with their patient base and give them a structured 3, 4, 6 months proficiency program. And then that program should not only focus on the doctor, that program also needs to focus on the staff, because a lot of the steps as part of a digital treatment are actually steps that the doctor is going to delegate. And you get to the recipient of this delegation needs to be fully embedded into the workflow too. Otherwise, it's at this point where it breaks.
True.
And the majority of companies are not yet there to do that assessment. And it's not, I think it's hard to say who's responsible for that. What I've seen is a lot of companies getting themselves into aligner therapy and into a clear aligner therapy commercialization is they're coming from selling transactional brackets and wires,
Yeah, true.
composite materials. And for them, the first challenge is internally to learn what it means selling a treatment, having this consultative approach, and understanding really what the customer is concerned about in his daily business operating a digital workflow. I need to be capable to leave features and benefits aside and sell solutions. And if I can understand the difference, or if I'm capable of understanding the difference between transactional and solutions, leaving features and benefit out of the equation, then I get access to the customer and I can provide a service that drives, in the end, loyalty. Because that is what companies today are actually fighting for, customer loyalty,
Of course.
right?
Of course.
And education drives customer loyalty, but only if the education meets customers' needs and expectations. Otherwise, it is just an offering that's on the shelf. You can pick, you never picked it. It's your fault, it's not mine, right? That is not how it works. We try to simplify it, but there's, as I said, too much out there. It's library education. Hours and hours of recorded sessions, which can be helpful.
I don't believe in on-demand education stuff, honestly. Because you cannot interact, that's the downside. And also, if you just, I mean, land it to people, right? If you give it to them, the whole thing, the whole nine yards, like as you like to say it, if you give all, then they say, okay, it's theirs. I look at it when I need it, when I want, but never look. They never look. So that's also one thing that we have to be honest, right? I've seen this many times. I mean, that's why I'm also a bit against online content. I don't do that very much. I don't mean like podcasts and stuff like that. I mean recorded online content. I don't provide that very much because I like to see the value of what I'm delivering in the eyes of the people that I'm delivering it to, right? I don't know what you think about this.
I perfectly agree with your sentiment here, Ada, because what from a corporate perspective, what is it that companies are most interested in? How much does it cost to acquire a new customer? What is my customer attrition or churn rate? And once I control the churn rate, what is customer lifetime value, right? So if I take those three KPIs, then I quickly figure out as a company what gets me from A to B to C and so on. And that is really what you said. I got to understand my customer's needs to that individual customer level. Because just saying here, and we have all seen salespeople going into practice and saying, any question that you're going to have, here is a link to our library, and you're going to find 300 hours of content around clear aligner therapy. They never go and look at it. They rather go and ask a friend if they
Of
have a
course.
problem,
It's
right?
a shortcut, right? Yeah.
Absolutely. Because it takes way more time going through a library.
Trying to find
Before
what
I
you're looking for,
find what
yeah.
I'm looking for, I
Exactly.
have tried it myself, or I have asked someone that I trust who is giving me the proper answer. And if a company understands this as an added value, then they drive customer loyalty to the extent that they were hoping for in the first place
True.
and aiming for.
But also, I think AI could, make us revisit this on-demand structure because if I ask like a ChatGPT interface what I'm looking for in terms of education and it can deliver it to me like that, and it's not going to be like a hour-long presentation, like 2 minutes, 3 minutes, what I need at that moment, it's going to be a game changer. There is no platform I know, at least, that provides that. But I'm sure it's going to come. So we may need to revisit this idea of on-demand education, and you know, we might want to get into that world. But I mean, in terms of us, I mean. But for now, I think yes, it's not. I mean, I have like 2-day lectures, right? Who's gonna sit down and watch those 2-day lectures if they need like a bit of information like that? Nobody. Nobody is gonna do that. So. I totally agree. It's a lot to learn, by the way, which is really interesting because it's just one product that delivers the entire treatment, but you have to learn so much about it. It's fascinating, on the other hand. But it's tremendous workload for also newcomers. As you said, they need to seek for help if they need. So, and it's out there. So many companies provide help. So... that's a great advice also.
And you know, Ada, I think from a clinician's perspective, I'm in the middle between company and patient, right?
Yes. You're in a unique position. Yeah.
Exactly. We also need, when we speak as from a company perspective, we also got to look at our customer, the doctor, as someone that is a bit in a sandwich, right? And no company yet really has managed to help practices to communicate a digital workflow efficiently to the patient.
True.
Because we demand patient cooperation, patient compliance, in especially in the line of therapy. If the patient is not compliant, then we will never achieve any results, you know, except for long refinements and multiple refinements,
never-ending treatments.
Exactly. And that is also one of the areas where I feel that companies can do better, helping doctors to be more, or practices to be more efficient in their patient communication when it comes to digital cooperation. Why are we using remote monitoring? You know, why are we preferring, in your case, a line of therapy over braces? And it's not only a convenience and aesthetic justification. Sure. There are also clinical reasons to prefer aligners over brackets and wires, right?
Definitely.
And that communication piece is also something that would strengthen the relationship between a company and a provider, and a provider and his patients, you know?
Right.
Something that I feel like has huge upside potential.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Let me very quickly go back to my notes. So I'm an ortho, let's say, okay? Changing the subject a little bit here. And I do about 15, 20 aligner cases a year. But I want to grow, right? So what advice would you give me?
Well, if you do 15 to 20 aligner cases a year, if we take the average of annual case starts in an ortho practice, then you're only servicing somewhere in the range of between 8 to 10% of your total patient volume with aligners, mm-hmm. right? So you are not utilizing your potential really adequately. So managing 15 to 20 cases a year, in my mind, it's a missed opportunity. It's a missed opportunity to leverage the treatment modality and to learn about aligner therapy to expand clinical selection criteria.
Can
right?
I also jump in here and sure. ask, do you think that utilizing 10% of your patient base per year makes a good business case?
No. No, not at all. Because if you do 10, let's say 15 cases a year, right? We say it's on average taking the holidays out of the equation, 1.5 cases a month, okay?
Yes.
So if you have one point, or let's say 2 cases a month, nobody is ever going to understand properly the workflow, because you have change in personnel, different shifts. The person that treated at the beginning, or the person that was working on the patient at the beginning of the month, might be not the same person that is working on the patient in the end of the month, patient number two. That means staff is going through the learning curve of a workflow every single time. That reflects on patient satisfaction. You feel if a practice is proficient and know the trick, or if they are not proficient with it. You, as a clinician, you start every single time from scratch, pretty much. You do not build that own proficiency that gets you excited about a line of therapy. If you
No.
do 2 cases a month, you got to ask yourself, what is your motivation to do 2 cases a month? Not that you believe in a line of therapy. If you believe in it, then you fully understand the clinical and also economical benefits of aligners. And then you have an natural motivation to go from 2 a month to 5 a month, maybe to 10 a month, and you expand your service offering to a wider patient audience, right? So the demographics out there supporting a higher growth rate, that's for sure. You got to ask yourself, as a provider, why am I not doing more than 2 cases a month? And what would I need? What is the gap? What would
You've
I need to
seen,
do to close the gap and feel
right.
comfortable going from 2 a month to maybe 5 a month?
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask. I mean, you've seen a lot of doctors take those steps, right? So in the long run, so we don't want them to, let's say, as you say, said to me a lot of times, drop it like a hot potato. So what would be a solid going up strategy in terms of numbers, right? First year, this many, second year, this many. Depends on where you want to get to, of course, but I see because a lot of doctors are going from 0 to 100 very fast and then dropping like to 25 again, struggling to go back to 70 because they're really not confident enough. They see a lot of problems in the clinic. The reason I also ask this because I mean, as you know, the tiers that doctors get to are celebrated by companies, right? So this is also another thing that most people criticize because doing a lot of cases does not make you a good doctor. So why the awards? And among young orthos, they say that this creates like this perception that they should right away jump in the pool and do as many cases that as they should to go there. And I haven't, thought about this on my own, but I want to hear your take on it.
Well, it's a little bit a double-edged sword here, right? What I mean by that is, you of course need to incorporate line of therapy systematically in your case presentations. You got to have a way to present a line of therapy to every patient that you see. But you got to do that based on your clinical selection criteria that you define. And I would probably recommend to anyone that starts to leverage third-party support. This is the easiest way to get the best out of two worlds. A, you see first and foremost what the patient wants, right? When you present a line of therapy, you get a reaction from your patients. And you're going to see that your conversion rate is probably going up. That's one thing. But at the same time, you may present aligner therapy to patients having a malocclusion that is a new one to yourselves. And you don't want to go, as you said, with 100 cases in the first case and then suffering for this refinement issue or with a refinement situation for long term. And that, kills your initial motivation. And then you trash for yourself a modality and say, I go back to braces. That doesn't work. It works, but it works only if you understand the clinical ramification relative to the malocclusion that you want to treat. And if you're uncertain, there's nothing wrong about it, it's your personal learning curve,
Sure.
then leverage corporate internal clinical support,
Yeah.
third-party external clinical
There's
support.
plenty of it. Yes.
Get a case evaluation, right? Learn to present the aligner therapy as an option to your patient, even if you have not received a full-fledged case eval. Get the case eval, be conscious about this, and then say, I am going to treat that patient and I monitor the patient very closely because it's my first open bite, my first deep bite, or whatever it is, right? But there's always a moment where it is your first. It was the
Yeah.
same with braces. There's always the one that's first. But digital technology can help you monitor and better plan for the outcome, right?
Right.
And then you actually are in your comfort zone from a clinical perspective, right? From a patient management perspective, because you can address this ahead of the treatment and not at the end of the treatment when the motivation is already down the drain.
Yeah.
But this is something that is a tool in the toolbox that I think has nothing to do with failure. As a clinician, it is a tool that should be used by any clinician that is running an orthodontic practice and wants to really go forward with clear aligner therapy to a wider patient range.
Well, also, I truly believe that you need quantity
Absolutely.
because without quantity, it's not possible to achieve
If you
quality,
treat
right?
it as a niche, it remains a niche, and your
Exactly.
clinical selection criteria are mimicking a niche. And you're
Exactly.
never going to enjoy it. You will never enjoy it. And not only you as a clinician are
And
not
I
going to
doubt
enjoy
very
it.
much, yeah. And I doubt very much the results are going to be satisfactory too. I mean,
Nobody's
I've
going to
never.
enjoy it. Not the doctor,
Exactly.
not the staff,
Exactly.
not the patient.
So, yeah, I mean, walk the steps slowly, confidently to achieve your goal. But in the end, you need quantity to be able to deliver quality treatments, quality service to your patients. I mean, it's a ladder that goes up with experience. That's for sure. Yeah, I mean that's also a big debate right now, by the way, that I see. The quality and quantity conversation is going around a lot. But I truly believe the companies are in a right path because they've seen the value of education. But right now it's a matter of organization. Within companies also, and also organization of, as you said, customized quality clinical content to deliver to doctors. And I hope someone utilizes AI for on-demand education content pretty soon to find the perfect solution for these things. Because it's also kind of difficult from doctors' eyes. I see that they try to attend to every event that aligner companies do, but it's taking them away from the clinic. It's making things really hard if you attend like three events in a month to go somewhere because you cannot go back to the practice at the end of the day and treat patients. It's impossible. It's a whole day event. You're away from the clinic for 3 days. The staff does not know what to do. Usually, that's also creates a bottleneck for doctors to choose which education they should attend to. Because also with social media, you want to be seen there, right? Taking a lot of photos with other doctors, with the speakers. You have the branding at the back to support your social media content. I understand all of these things, but still, it's taking too much time on the doctor's part, I believe, sometimes to attend these events. And to choose the right event by just looking at the content from afar is not possible, I believe, because I've seen many events that I looked at the content. I said, I mean, what are they going to deliver with this content, right? But I go there and I see amazing speakers. I learn so much. You never know. You cannot judge a book by its cover, so to speak. Thank you for that. And I think I have one more question for you, Frank. So I don't want to be want this to be one way, by the way. If you have any questions for me, go ahead, shoot.
Well, based on what you said, Ada, where do you see the next big areas of improvement when it comes to clinical adoption on a wider range of the ortho landscape? We are not talking about GPs at the moment. We focus only on orthodontists. But what would be, based on your experience, the next big thing to drive adoption amongst orthodontists?
My answer is going to be maybe biased, but since we are utilizing AI in our treatment plans, so I told you this briefly, but I want to tell the audience. So we initially built the AI for our internal use. So we were getting up to the limit of how many cases that we can manage in a year. So we said, okay, we need to optimize things. And in case a staff member leaves, by the way, this is exactly the same for a clinic also. So if a staff member leaves, then we need to train them, educate them. It takes like 4 months or 5 months, sometimes depending on the quality of the staff. But so it's really challenging, and we needed to have a solid foundation of things so that we get less involved in modifying the cases. So we implemented AI in a way that it made our lives easier. And we said, okay, let's open it up to public. Let everyone take benefit from it. It's really low cost, by the way, right now. Among all other AI things out there, this might be also the cheapest. But anyways, I'm not right now thinking about that side of things. I want people to get on it and utilize it, use it, see the benefit, because I believe that technology is going to save us in the end. People usually think in the beginning that technology gets them into a mess. That's true, because there are a lot of things to learn in the beginning. Doesn't seem like it makes your life easier. It even makes it harder in the beginning. But once you get used to it, looking back at old times, let me put it like this. So there are people who are still, like, I'm not going to say against aligners, not so much, but answering your question. So who don't adopt aligners as others do, maybe. But to the ones that adopted aligners, I ask them quite often, what if I took aligners out of your practice today? Mm-hmm. Would you be able to survive in today's world? And they all say, no.
Yeah.
I cannot do without aligners now. So coming from that perspective, if we are able to make technology a immediate friend, right? Not a friend that you get acquainted in maybe like 6 months or a year to get to know them, but an immediate friend. And I believe this is possible with AI. If we can break that barrier, of course, clinical confidence, you can add everything into the basket. But in the end, I believe that first wave that hits people is the technology, the fear of technology. Will I be able to, and I mean, I don't want to like look down on people, because I don't know their ability of using tech, but I mean, using a 3D planning software is not easy. It looks user-friendly once you get to know the software, but at the first glance, it's not user-friendly. And I don't see any way how it can be other than implementing AI. So you can have like an AI tutor right next to your screen, walking you through things, helping you on the case. So it's like having a teacher on your side, one-on-one. And I believe that is going to change the game in terms of clinical confidence, technology of fear. It's going to overcome all of these things. It's coming. It's coming, by the way. So
What would
that's
you
the
say?
solution.
What would you say? Thank you. I appreciate that. And it triggered another question.
Go ahead.
Well, the companies that we all know providing a line of therapy use AI at different dimensions in
Usually
their
at their own
treatment.
end, at their own
Exactly.
end, yeah.
But that is exactly the question that I like to ask you. Wouldn't it be more beneficial for everyone involved, if this AI wouldn't operate in the hidden, it would be visible to the
Yeah.
doctor so that they also could learn from the algorithm that predict rotations, intrusion, tipping, movement, whatever kind of movement within the biological parameters of a force system where it makes sense. Because not having the visibility means I remain in dependency of someone, right? Having the visibility enables me, if I
Also,
want to learn it myself and get
yeah.
better in my own judgment about clinical outcomes and clinical predictability in the line of therapy, right?
Also, if you hide something, then it's very difficult to trust it, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
So
So you.
in a way to make it open to share. And then it's the provider's choice to learn from it or to ignore it. You still can ignore the
Sure.
information if you want to,
Sure.
but I like the idea of being fully transparent and saying, well, you will never get this or that because the movement, the way you demand it over time, doesn't make sense. We got to do this first before we do the next step. And that means the sequence is defined based on those clinical parameters. People don't see that today, right?
Sure. I mean, it also affects the workflow because sometimes people say, I'm gonna give an example from Invisalign. So people say, sometimes my plans arrive on the day of the modification. Sometimes they arrive like 3 days later, some even 4 days. So I often ask them, in what order do you do the modifications, for example? I don't want to get into too much detail, but here's the thing. So if, for example, people like to deliver all of the things that they see on the case from the first modification. They write, reduce the limits, reduce the tooth movements, place this attachment, and do this type of sequencing and send it on the first modification. Okay, I love the idea. You want to do less modifications as possible, but once it comes back and you want to change something and you play with it and do like a live update on the ClinCheck, then all the things that you ask for in sequencing, for example, could be gone like that. And you might need to ask for them again. And I learned this like a couple of years ago that setting up the sequencing for a technician takes about 40 to 45 minutes, which is a huge amount of time if you consider the daily work of a technician, right? And I have huge respect for technicians, by the way. So, if I ask just for one case for sequencing twice, then what is that technician gonna do, right? So they have to finish maybe like they have a quota, right? They need to finish like 20 cases, 25 cases in a day. So I get the modification back and I'm asking for the sequencing again from the technician. And then what they're gonna do? They're gonna finish their quota with other cases then leave my case to the end of the day, maybe. It's human behavior. I mean, you cannot get around it, right? So maybe they're gonna look at it the next day. So I'm getting back the clean check the day after, right? So you need to know how the algorithm works, how technicians work. So these things need to be transparent as possible so that we should be the judge of, as doctors, I mean, I said doctors should be the judge of the human behavior, the algorithm, as you said, so that they can find a way to work faster with the systems. So doctor wants to approve the case fast, right? Companies want doctors to approve the case fast. So patients want doctors to approve the case fast. So it's coming together at the doctor's end, but what do they know what's going on behind the screen, right? So that's kind of the things I also like to deliver when I'm giving lectures, because it helps you right away. From that day, you go back to your clinic, you go back to your computer and plan a case. It helps you right away and fasten things, makes things faster, faster.
That sounds a bit like the 101 of digital orthodontic treatment planning for aligners, right?
Yes.
And nobody says that during any of those courses, corporate courses, right? Nobody really understands the KPIs applied to the team behind the curtain, right?
Exactly.
They have quotas, you said it, the quarters are day and week and month and quarter end, right?
Sure.
That is how the system is being built. And if I, as a provider that's new to this technology, understands the sequence of operation of a technician that works on my case, then it helps also me to manage my time in my practice, because then I may get through the whole treatment planning process with three alterations, smaller increments, instead of investing an enormous amount of time upfront to put everything into one and the first. But then I have four or five additional alterations, which are
Exactly.
sliced and diced in smaller bits and pieces that complement an algorithm and a workflow that I'm not aware of.
Exactly. You have best of intentions on the first modification. You deliver everything, but that's not how the system works. That's not how things are set up right now. So, I mean, there are also a lot of changes going on in terms of prescriptions, in terms of the digital workflow. That, I mean, since the live update on ClinCheck, everything has changed. And also for other brands, we have 3D controls. So right now, I mean, is a very strange time for doctors because, as you said, they need more transparency. They need education on these things for sure. For the company side of things. And I love the fact that some companies are organizing like factory tours or like lab tours where they take people to their labs and see how technicians work and have chat with technicians. That could also work. Having regular like roundtable sessions with technicians, right?
Can we spend a second on the myth of technicians? The people are have not necessarily having a clinical education, right? The
Now,
technicians.
they do. In the old days, when we first launched aligners in Turkey, for example, I remember that some of them were even farmers. But nowadays, it's mostly dental professionals. I mean, technicians, sometimes even GPs, orthos. So most of them are like that. But again, you know many companies, many brands, how they operate. So you know it
But
best, but.
where I'm heading with this is, I think it's important to understand for doctors submitting treatment prescriptions that the person at the corporate level is supposed to translate that prescription into software language.
Exactly.
The person is not responsible for giving it a clinical validation to
Of
start
course.
with.
Of course.
And I think that's a very crucial piece of information that doctors got to understand in the first place, that the person who is working there translate my prescription into software language.
I think nowadays that myth is sort of overcome, but there is another myth that's going around because now people think that the algorithm should be able to give me predictable outcomes. Okay, so technician might not, okay, but there's also an algorithm that's working behind the scenes. And okay, so how do you get, I mean, how do you overcome that?
Well, I think, but the companies are doing all a great job. That's without a question. But clinicians have a responsibility to pick and pull the right tools that they need at the right time for themselves and for their patients. And leveraging a third party is absolutely appropriate because a third party can be a peer. Right? The third party can be an independent expert in treatment planning. The third party can whatever. It's not a failure. Definitely not. And you get to understand how a company operates in order to see what am I as the treatment responsible need to complement into the process, right? And in the end, it all equates into time. Your personal time is so valuable in the practice that you can ask yourself, do I want to do four treatment plan alterations myself? Or do I have someone that works off of my clinical protocols and helps me to achieve that with less time on my behalf, so that I can focus on my practice, on treatment monitoring, blah, 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 whatever it is, right? Because there is this treatment planning fatigue. Huh? You don't want to look at the same patient seven times. There is a point where you have time pressure, and then you approve the case because I can fix certain things through the refinement, but then that gets a little bit out of hand when you get there, right? We have seen this.
It's gonna catch up on you, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yes. I mean, refinements are not a bad thing per se. It depends on how many and how long are you going to refine a case in the end,
For
because
sure.
that is where you lose ultimately patients' motivation. And if you lost the motivation of your patient, then it's an unfulfilling task. If the patient is not compliant anymore, then you're not going to achieve any clinical desirable clinical outcomes.
So we should not miss at any time that doctor is the sole responsible for the treatment.
Correct.
So the companies are only obliged to deliver what the doctor asks.
But wouldn't
So
it be fair then, Ada, if the companies would tell the doctor
exactly.
exactly what their responsibility as part of this entire
True.
workflow?
True. True.
And this is something that has never been expressed explicitly, except for the legal purposes in the terms and
Exactly.
conditions.
Exactly.
But there is this mystical perception, right?
Yeah.
And I think sometimes that needs to be reiterated. The message that you as a doctor have a full responsibility, the person translate your pre-treatment prescription into software language. And if there is a gap, yes, we can help you. Then you need to have a clinical consultation, or you consult with a third party for that clinical consultation. But it is not per se a result of our services because we are not responsible for the treatment.
Yeah. And also, you mentioned this a lot. I mean, so when something becomes digital in the dental world, it levels the playing field in terms of certain skills, right? So in that sense, I mean, the best ortho probably was, I'm sorry to say, but was the one who bended the best wire, right? Who was best at bending wires. But now it's not. Now it's all here. I mean, you need to implement your thoughts onto the 3D platform, the digital platform. But in that sense, then, that's, I think, the root of the misconception. People think that once something is digital, it's going to be done for them, you know? And their input is even more needed than ever, I believe, because it's all brain work. So it's not like hand and tool skills, but it's all brain work. And now, more than ever, you need to use your head and get to know your stuff, right? But in the sense that you can say, okay, I'm not good with my hands, I don't like tools. Okay, then digital levels the playing field for everyone and creates a common denominator in terms of also brings the quality up because then treatments that were lacking quality due to like tool skills, hand skills are no longer suffering from that. It's all about planning, implementing what you think, what you experienced, what you are going to see throughout the treatment onto the digital treatment plan from day one. So that's, I believe, the root of the misconception. Especially now, it's going to be bigger because of AI here, because you can get ChatGPT to do so many tasks for you. You don't need to write essays anymore, or like term projects, or whatever you want to call it, or like maybe like lectures, boardroom speeches. So it can do everything for you. But again, don't think for a second that if you don't ask for something from ChatGPT, it's not going to deliver anything back to you. So you are the one again asking for it. You know, you are the one who knows what to ask. So that I'm sure it's going to hit us with the next misconception once AI is getting more involved in things. But still, it works on our input. That's something that we should not forget.
Absolutely. And, I think aligner therapy is moving from an option to become a strategic practice advantage, right? I mean, we have to see it like that.
Sure.
And as it is based on digital technology, you just elaborated on the importance of AI. Clinicians need to understand that the AI technology that's available today, and which is going to evolve with regards to treatment planning, in orthodontics even further, it's going to be a supportive add-on. It does not take away that whole game about diagnostics and all this, right? This is not taking it out of the equation. You still got
Exactly.
to understand orthodontia, but it makes it easier to be successful in a practice with a new modality that has a huge potential to change a life, sorry, to change orthodontia even further. I mean, if we look at this on the bigger picture, there are companies that have been neglected a line of therapy for the last 20 years and were holding on to brackets and wires.
Yeah.
And these companies see now that there is a diminishing return on brackets and wires. Nobody invests any big R&D dollar anymore in brackets and wires because every R&D penny is going to be spent in digital orthodontics, not in
Sure.
analog orthodontics. And they are n big analog bracket and wire companies out there suffering. Even their installed customer base today, with the greatest deal of loyalty to a brand, asking them, are you also offering
Yeah,
aligners?
yeah.
And that is, there is a shift. And what we need to understand is adopting aligner therapy has never been easier than what it is today, and it will become easier as we go forward. The heavy lifting was in the past. Now we all understand how to complement and support in practice ambitions to grow aligner cases, but you got to have a plan once. As an owner operator, you got to make a plan, or you got to consult with someone that has the ability to sit down, take a blank piece of canvas, and come up with a plan that guides the provider from a pure analog orthodontist into a more digital-oriented orthodontist.
True.
And this is a great opportunity that's out there. And if you want to, you can get all of this from your aligner provider of choice. They all have it, right? Or you go somewhere else and get it from another trusted partner.
Great. So, one last question, Frank.
Sure.
So, we're gonna wrap this up. Starting from where you left off right now. So, I'm an ortho doing maybe like 75, 80 cases per year on aligners, right? So, how should I position myself for days to come regarding also other brands of aligners, not just one? We have many. So, how would you position yourself for the future?
I think there is a way to look at it from your patient cohort, meaning traditionally orthodontists are working with patients in a growing bone phase, right? Children, adolescents. That is something that I see is the next opportunity with aligner therapy. Probably not for everyone, but for a number of patients. In that cohort, aligners can be the modality of choice. Then, of course, I would advise always to look for a second brand to complement clinical capabilities. Different manufacturers, they're all working off of the same workflow pretty much. A scan is a scan, and yeah, you got to learn probably a new treatment software, but 80% of the treatment software is
Not very
same,
different from each
is
other,
not
though.
that different. But what we see is that the different provider, different aligner companies offer different clinical features, and expanding your view into biomechanics with aligner through different aligner manufacturers is huge. It's a huge value. So be open-minded. Have your brand of choice that goes for 80% of your aligner patients, but maybe be also open to pick a second brand that has some specialties that you're not getting somewhere else that you may want to apply to the 20%. And if you are uncertain about it, find someone that uses that brand already. And learn from him. I mean, peer-to-peer education is great. And the diversity in the treatment modality is growing. And it's like many people are loyal to one car brand, and then they add a second car brand to what they have in the garage, right? So look at this like that. You can have two brands in your garage, and you develop a preference for a second brand specifically on patient needs or on pricing or whatever it takes in the end.
Yeah, also you are building your business on one brand, and it's also kind of like maybe risky a little bit, because market conditions change, anything can happen tomorrow, and getting acquainted with multiple aligner brands, I believe, is a good strategy, because also people have contractual obligations, like they buy devices with packs of cases. So yeah, get them in, do them, but also try other brands.
Well, I think what you're describing here from an economical perspective and from an operational perspective is something that comes into play with a certain provider maturity level, right?
Yeah, for sure.
But I wasn't really looking at this from an
I know.
operations perspective. I
I
was
know.
looking at this more from a clinical
Clinical. Yeah.
perspective because I think it is good when you get into aligners ADA to have maybe two or three different systems next to each other. Not that you need to run three systems in your
Yeah,
practice,
yeah, yeah,
but
yeah.
just what works for you best, right? And then, of course, when you mature, when you have bigger contracts, higher volumes, then you can also leverage a second brand strategically
True.
to better represent your business requirements than what you would be able to if you have only one provider.
Also clinical, right?
Exactly.
They go hand in hand. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. I think the sky is the limit here, right? I mean, just think about what I said at the beginning. We have about 25 million orthodontic case starts annually, over 500 million patients that would benefit from ortho treatment, and those 25 million case starts are not all aligner case starts, right?
Sure.
So the sky is the limit, really. I mean, it's exciting,
True.
even for us as we are into this already for so long. What's going to come
The
is
fire still keeps on burning.
absolutely, absolutely, yes.
Yeah. Okay, great. So, yeah, let's wrap this up. So, if you want to have final words to say something.
Well, first of all, it was really the pleasure to spend so much time with
Likewise.
you to do. We
Likewise.
probably need to spend more often time together. I like the exchange. I like your perspective because you are one of the very few that look at this from the view of a clinician, a business owner from an economical perspective, and in
True.
between. Also, as someone that provides a service to your peer group, right? And that's very unique because you understand pretty much the whole nine yards of what really matters to your customers, so to speak, right? That's pretty cool. I learned a lot today. Thank you so much
Me
for
too,
your
thank you.
time. I do believe that the next years to come are going to give us another wave of evolutionary benefits with regards to clear aligner therapy. I do believe that the combination therapy is probably one of the big things that's going to come. It helps the adoption for sure. And anything else that's out there that makes doctors, staff, and patients' life more convenient, easier, and better in terms of achieving clinical results.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you, Ada.
It's been really refreshing, to do this with you. I hope we can do this face to face again someday. But we're gonna chat regularly, I'm sure. Not in a podcast manner, by maybe, but we're gonna be in touch. So thank you for taking the time, Frank.
My
It's been
pleasure.
amazing, really. I enjoyed it a lot. So thank you everyone for listening. And we'll be together on the next episodes. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.